This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News tonight.
The night has been marred by looting, gas station and home of a relative of the former regime were ransacked by demonstrators since yesterday evening, and it went on all night.
That's Bagasi Kura of VOA's French to Africa service talking about the aftermath of yesterday's military coup that forced Mali's president to resign. Details coming up also. In the newly created Egyptian Senate, members will only have an advisory role without legislative power. And almost 500 fighters from a faction of one of the largest armed groups in the Eastern DRC surrenders. All these and more ahead on Africa News tonight. But first, our top story. The military coup in Mali has plunged the country, which already was facing a jihadist insurgency and mass protests, deeper into turmoil. Soldiers who arrested President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita yesterday, leading to his resignation and dissolution of parliament, are promising to restore stability and oversee a transition to elections within a reasonable period of time. Bagasi Kura of VOA's French Africa Service spoke with International Edition's Steve Miller about the aftermath of the mutiny.
What we learned this morning is that the night has been marred by looting, gas station and home of a relative of the former regime were ransacked by demonstrators since yesterday evening, and it went on all night. In some market, the central market, some store have been broken in by soldiers. That's what we are hearing from our stringer in Bamako. And he's saying that he went to the main hospital in Bamako, where nurses are saying there are four dead and many injured. Some have gone through surgery, which means that because there was no gunfight, it probably coming from stray bullets that has been fired all night in Bamako.
Last night on Tuesday, President Keita resigned, and now there's a new junta in charge of the country. What do we know about them?
Not much at all. All we know is that overnight, the spokesperson of the coup, Malian Air Force Deputy Chief of Staff Ismail Wage, appeared almost 2 hours after Keita speak, which is around midnight in Mali. He spoke around midnight, and he said that he was pledging for a political transition and new election within, quote, reasonable time. He also said the transition will be a civilian transition, and they are asking all organizations, political parties, and union to come and work with them. So what we expect this morning is that they might be trying to discuss with the opposition, which has been on the street for days or for weeks now.
Are there any concrete plans as to what exactly will follow from this point forward?
We don't know because, ECOWAS reacted strongly yesterday. They closed the border. All 16 ECOWAS countries have closed the border with Mali. They stopped every financial transaction with Mali. What you need to know is that Mali is part of CFA franc, which belongs to at least 8 countries in West Africa, and the central bank is in Dakar, Bamako. So they stop all transactions, which means to even pay salary of civil servant at the end of the month will be an issue for Malian. So there is a sanction, but in reaction, the spokesperson also said that Mali is closing its border, so which will make it difficult to send in envoy or negotiator from ECOWAS or from anywhere else to try to discuss with them. So we don't know where this standoff will lead.
That was Bagasi Kura of VOA's Freight to Africa service speaking with International Edition's Steve Miller. The events unfolding in Mali have sparked sharp criticism from around the world as the troubled country, already plagued by surging jihadist attacks, has stumbled further backward at the point of a gun. Nicolas Pinault has more from Paris for VOA News.
The Economic Community of West African States says it utterly condemns the overthrow yesterday of President Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta. ECOWAS vowed in a statement to close land and air borders to Mali and push for sanctions against all the putschists and their partners and collaborators. The 15-nation bloc, which includes Mali, also said it would suspend the country from its internal decision-making bodies. A meeting by video conference is scheduled for tomorrow. The UN Security Council is holding emergency talks today in New York as UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres demands the immediate and unconditional release of Malian officials held captive by soldiers in Bamako. France and Niger requested the meeting. The United States and France also released separate statements, voicing deep concern about the turn of events and urge against regime change. French President Emmanuel Macron condemned the mutiny, according to his office, and said he supported mediation effort by other West African states to resolve the crisis. The U.S. envoy to the region, J. Peter Pham, joined the calls for restraint and echoed opposition to any extra-constitutional change. Nicolas Pinault for VOA News, Paris.
Egypt's National Election Authority has announced the members of the newly created Senate, which will have only an advisory role without legislative powers. Many experts say the elections, which generated little turnout, will not bring about political change, as most candidates have the approval of President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi. Constitutional amendments in April 2019 reinstated Parliament's second chamber, which was abolished in 2014. VOA senior analyst Mohamed Al-Shenawi discussed the elections with Saeed Sadiq, professor of political sociology at the American University in Cairo.
As you know, in many developing countries, parliamentary institutions are not strong. You don't have checks and balances. You don't have separation of powers. And since 1866, the parliament in Egypt has always lacked power to effectively balance with the power of the head of the state, whether he's a monarch, he is a president. There was always this problem. And we always had a mix. Sometimes we have bicameral legislature, and sometimes we had a unicameral. Before 1952, we had bicameral system, but the new revolution in 1952 abolished the Senate, and it was restored back in 1980 when Sadat visited the U.S. and was influenced by the American Senate, and he said, why don't we have it back here? So we had that from 1980 until 2014, when it was abolished again because people said it was a waste of money, because it is only an advisory body, not really a legislative body, and it was made for rewarding loyalists to the regime. So nobody had this high hope about it, especially nobody explained why it is back again.
The Egyptian Senate elections were held as per the closed list system, which is perceived to have stripped opposition of any sense of competition. Why the Egyptian election law is adopting this system?
Any parliamentary election, any Senate election in the world requires strong political parties. We have very weak political parties. We have 104 political parties. Both under Mubarak and both under Sisi, the parties are weak. And so one way to strengthen them is to put them on a list. But still, the popularity and effectiveness of those parties are in doubt. And that's why not many people are really enthusiastic about it. And so they thought that by closed list, when you bring up so many political parties at the same group, you may get a higher turnout. But this is not true, because people feel this new Senate is not going to provide any legislation or any new addition to the Egyptian political development.
At the closing of the polls, initial data emerged on voter turnout was 7.5% in the Qaliyya governorate. Then the National Election Authority warned the media not to publish any results or data related to the elections before the official announcement. How do you explain this?
You need a quorum, a minimum for turnout to make this election legitimate. You need 5% at least. Now, people feel that because of coronavirus, nobody is going. So the turnout was expected to be low. And if you add to it that this is a Senate that people were not happy about it, and that's why it was abolished 6 years ago, you can understand why the government is interested that they show that there is a high turnout, that there is high presence. They are really worried about any reporting that would not reflect the minimum number that they wanted.
But why the Senate was reinstated anyway?
It seems that they wanted to reward some loyalists, they wanted to consolidate power and networks across the country, and that is why they felt that they need that to boost the existing political system. And the Senate will have representatives in different parts of the country who would be the eyes and ears and centers of power on behalf of the government. And so they wanted to consolidate power that they already enjoy.
That was Saeed Sadiq, professor of political sociology at the American University in Cairo, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi. Almost 500 fighters from a faction of one of the largest armed groups in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo have surrendered just over a month after they tried to overthrow their leader. According to Reuters, fighting has raged between two groups of the NDCR rebels since July 9th, since a faction loyal to deputy leader Gilbert Biwira Shuho attempt to oust leader Chimaraya Gudon, who is the target of UN sanctions, accusing him of human rights abuses. Before the split, the NDCR controlled vast areas of North Kivu province near the border with Rwanda and Uganda. The group earned money from the illicit gold trade and was frequently accused of being used by the army as a proxy force against other armed groups. The United Nations reports humanitarian workers are facing unprecedented levels of violence while risking their lives to provide life-saving aid to millions of civilians caught in situations of crisis. This year's World Humanitarian Day paid tribute to these thousands of unsung real-life heroes. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
World Humanitarian Day was created in the aftermath of the terrorist attack on the UN compound in Baghdad on August 19, 2003. 22 people were killed, including the Secretary General's Special Representative for Iraq, Sergio Vieira de Mello. Since then, nearly 5,000 aid workers have been killed, wounded, or abducted. Spokesman for the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, Jens Laerke, tells VOA humanitarian workers in 2019 were subjected to a record number of attacks in conflict zones around the world.
Last year, there was a total of 483 aid workers who were targeted. In the fields where they are doing their life-saving work, 125 of them were killed in the line of duty, and the same number were kidnapped, and many more were wounded.
The UN reports most of the attacks occurred in Syria, followed by South Sudan, Democratic Republic of Congo, Afghanistan, and the Central African Republic. Laerke says every time aid workers are targeted, it has a ripple effect on the population they are trying to help.
The vast majority of aid workers on the front lines, those aid workers that we are calling the real heroes of the day, are nationals of the country where they work. Very often they're members of the same communities that they are helping. Some are refugees helping their fellow displaced people or even the host communities where they are. Others are local doctors and nurses offering their services free of charge.
Still others, he says, are international aid workers who jump from crisis to crisis. Humanitarian agencies warn delivering aid has become even more dangerous in the current coronavirus pandemic. The International Committee of the Red Cross has documented more than 600 incidents of violence, harassment, or stigmatization against healthcare workers, patients, and medical infrastructure in relation to COVID-19 cases during the first 6 months of the pandemic. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Dozens of women in Cameroon's English-speaking southwest are protesting today against recent violence by suspected rebels. Women in the town of Bouya say they are increasingly victims of the region's four-year separatist conflict. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
About 70 women, all wearing dark dresses, sing as they march through the streets of the southwestern town of Bouya on Tuesday. In the songs, they say they are tired of burying their children, husbands, and recently their sisters. The Cameroon Women's Peace Movement organized the peaceful protest. Its spokesperson, Agbo Magdalene, says they were outraged by the recent slaughter of a 32-year-old woman in the southwestern town of Muyuka on August 11.
The women of the southwest expressed unreserved indignation at this murder, which is one too many in the long list of senseless killings perpetrated by suspected separatist fighters. We call on the government to strike down the killers of Timassam Comfort Aferi, while inviting the population to give full collaboration to the security forces in their investigations.
Comfort, a mother of two, was gruesomely murdered in Muyuka, and a video of her beheading went viral on social media, provoking widespread condemnation. The government of Cameroon, rights groups, the United Nations, and embassies in Yaoundé blamed separatists and asked for investigations to be carried out and Comfort killers punished. Cameroon said it was the 11th case of attacks reported on women and social workers in August. 43-year-old Precious Mbuel says she joined the women in the peaceful protest because she also lost her aunt in the northwestern town of Bamenda.
I asked myself, what is really going on? Why are women being the target? I cried and I decided to come out to say enough is enough. Women should not be the target. Our hearts are bleeding. They are killing our children, killing our husbands, killing even us, the women, who gave birth to all of them.
Bowell said she wants all killers of women and children to be brought to justice. Bernard Okalia-Bilai, governor of Cameroon's southwest region, where Bouya is found, says he is delighted that women are increasingly rising up to denounce violence in spite of threats from separatists. He says the women should help the military to conquer the separatists by denouncing all fighters in their localities.
I want you to go back to your various villages and quarter. Tell the other women to go out and call those used sons by killing your children. Call them to stop it.
Bilai said women should consider the military as their partners and should not believe in what he called propaganda by separatists that the troops commit atrocities. The women said they will continue their protest in other English-speaking towns, but did not say when. The four-year separatist crisis in Cameroon's English-speaking northwest and southwest regions began with lawyers and teachers' protests over overbearing use of the French language in the minority English-speaking country. The military responded with a crackdown, and separatists took weapons, saying that they were protecting their communities from military brutality. Over 3,000 people have been killed and 500,000 displaced, according to the United Nations. 50,000 others escaped to neighboring Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
A judge in Zimbabwe sparked controversy this week when he barred a prominent lawyer from representing a journalist facing charges of stoking violence. The judge said attorney Beatrice Matewa should be charged with contempt of court and asked the Law Society of Zimbabwe to revoke her license. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare on what critics say is an attempt to curtail the journalist's right to choose his attorney.
Richard Chiza, spokesman of the Law Society of Zimbabwe, the statutory body which licenses lawyers, told VOA his organization has yet to receive the ruling by Magistrate Ngoni Nduna, which orders the organization to review the license of Beatrice Mthethwa.
Once we receive the order, we can then apply our minds to it and issue a necessary response to what has been ordered by the magistrate. But for now, the position is that we await the order and the judgment.
Mthethwa is a member of Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, a group that has often challenged the government. Judge Nduna said Mthethwa showed contempt for the justice system when she said journalist Hope Chingono had been abducted rather than arrested. He also cited a letter she wrote to court officials accusing the judge of denying bail to suspects arrested on politically motivated charges. Love Momaduku is a professor of constitutional law at the University of Zimbabwe and a veteran lawyer. He says the right of an accused person to be represented by the lawyer of his or her choice is one of the most fundamental rights in any democratic society.
So if there were any issues relating to the conduct of Beatrice outside the court, that ought to have been handled separately. They should have given more focus on the fact that what was before the court was the right to liberty for Hope. The only recourse is to urgently approach a high court judge to have that decision set aside. I mean, urgent basis. The decision can be set aside without the difficult formalities, because it's a decision made while proceedings for liberty are in progress.
Ziyambe Ziyambe, Zimbabwe's justice minister, said Wednesday that the government will not comment on the developments as it was not cited in the judge's ruling. Mthethwa believes she did nothing wrong in her quest to secure bail for journalist Ngono, who has been in prison since his arrest July 20th. Chingono was arrested together with opposition leader Jacob Ngaruvume on allegations of stalking violence ahead of an anti-government protest. Mthethwa sees the hand of the government at work and suspects the judge's order will affect both her own career and the work of Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights.
It is not a coincidence that is an order that says I must be prosecuted. So clearly, when that order is coming from the court that will be hearing the case, there will be that chilling effect. The intention is to stop us defending a certain type of client. Obviously, we are going to challenge the decision, but it means the right to legal representation has been severely curtailed by the courts, which are actually supposed to be expanding that right.
On Wednesday, Chingono was back at the court for his third bail attempt with another official from Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights. Mthethwa was at the same court representing members of the opposition movement for democratic change, facing charges of participating in an illegal public gathering. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
The United States has imposed sanctions on four Ugandans for allegedly participating in a fraudulent adoption scam. Reuters cited the U.S. Treasury Department as saying Ugandan children were taken from their families under a promise of special education programs and study in the U.S., but instead were offered to American families for adoption. Ugandan judges Moses Mukibu and Wilson Musala Museni, lawyer Doran Mirembe and her husband Patrick Akoba are accused of deliberately exploiting the good faith of Ugandans and Americans to enrich themselves while causing great suffering. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.